You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
How are you feeling after that, Matt?
I feel a lot better than Bob.
Extra Time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Get lost.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Ow! From New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental from my apartment in Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn. I'm Andrew Wiebe, joined by my partners in soccer, David Goss, Kaelin Carr, Matt Doyle. What's up, guys? How you feeling? How you doing? We've got a new locale. I see it here. It's a little crunchy where you are, Dave. There's a lot of hiking and Tevas and, kombucha and things of that nature. Do you
Absolutely.
Feel changed now that you're in Colorado?
It's just, you guys live to work and I work to live. It's a work-life balance thing. And this is more my lifestyle and this is more what I'm made for.
Could you do it if your better half was like, we got it. We just got to get out of New York. We're moving to Colorado. She said that.
So first of all, she would never say the first part because New York's the greatest place in the world. But if she said that she had another option, I would just go anywhere. So it wouldn't really matter. But I could definitely live here. Guys, you go out. If I walk 5 steps out, I could see mountains to my left. Mm-hmm. There's trees with leaves. There's so much happening. It's so pretty. Now, I've only been here for 24 hours. In 2 days, I'll probably be bored. But I really like it right now.
Can I ask you one question before we get to all the different things we have to talk about in Major League Soccer today and find a way to get that bored look off Kaelin's face? Because he's like, God, what are they talking
That's
about?
Just my face.
Wait. So it's an RBF, but it's a resting bored face.
Yes, exactly.
I got you. Okay. Yeah. We'll try to entertain you.
Yeah, this is enthralling. Let's go deeper. Goss.
Are you scared of bears, David?
Not particularly, but my better half is extremely aware of them. And anytime we go hiking, the first acorn that falls, he's like, is it a black bear, a brown bear? What do we run towards it or do we run away from it?
Is that different rules? Are we between the cub and the mama? What are we going to do?
There's a lot of bear talk in this house.
I only ask you because bears are big right now in Major League Soccer. Yeah. We have our Continental Tire Awards or Continental Awards, the animal interaction of the year. I thought it was going to be the murderous predatory owl in Miami, but now there's a
still front runner.
There's a black bear at Red Bull Arena, and I don't know if they have bear boxes there. I don't know how they're handling scat. I don't know how any of this is working.
I thought Aurelien Collin wasn't playing center back for the Red Bulls anymore.
Whoa! And with that, we're gonna put a bow on it. Hey, happy Indigenous Peoples Day, everybody! I encourage you on this day, as with any day, to both celebrate the culture, but also in its myriad of many different cultures, but also to read history and to understand what really happened to Indigenous peoples in the U.S., in Canada, and pretty much everywhere in the developed world. So chew on that for a little bit. Canadian Thanksgiving is today as well. I am told that it is strictly a harvest holiday, and as a good Kansan, I am all about harvest. So
today is the day that they harvest the poutine, I believe.
Huh? Yeah, something like that. Either way, happy Canadian Thanksgiving. Let's get to it, and let's start with the topic that we have increasingly been talking about and is both a problem for Major League Soccer and a problem for our society. 3 matches postponed this weekend in MLS because of positive COVID tests. Orlando Columbus, that's postponed. 2 positive tests for crew staff, 1 in the Orlando playing squad. A crew spokesperson said today that there are no new positive cases after staff testing on Sunday. So unless MLS recommends no training, the crew will return to training ahead of Wednesday's game at FC Cincinnati. Players and staff, of course, testing today and tomorrow. FC Dallas Minnesota was postponed. 2 positive tests in Minnesota's squad. And Colorado LA Galaxy was postponed. Another positive test for the Rapids. That's their 4th game that's postponed. Wear masks. Take this seriously. Protect yourselves. Protect your families. I know that it gets tiring to talk about this. I know that it's tiring in your daily lives, but I just keep thinking about and going back in my life, what it felt like when my wife had this, when it was a real possibility that this could go very, very wrong for my family. And I just don't want anybody else to have that feeling. I want us all to get back to normal. I don't want anybody to suffer. And we all have to do our part to make that happen. So
Also, if you've ever watched Extra Time Radio or any of the MLS shows we work on, you may notice that I'm arguably the sweatiest person you've ever seen. If I can wear a face shield with my sweat dripping down it and run in a mask, you guys can all wear masks consistently throughout your life.
It's it's honestly disgusting. All right, let's talk about soccer. Red Bulls, they made a trade. They traded for Caden Clark's rights. Caden Clark had played for the Baby Bulls for Red Bulls 2 already. He had been very good. David Goss had called those games. Minnesota had territorial claim to him because he was in the Minnesota Thunder Academy. They got 75K GAM, and the Red Bulls said, you know what? Straight out onto the playing field you go in Major League Soccer, Caden Clark. And Caden Clark said, bang, here is a game-winning goal and a moment that that 17-year-old kid will remember forever. What a moment. I think it's the biggest of the weekend. It's what I would tell somebody who walked up to me and said, what happened to Major League Soccer this weekend? And I would say a 17-year-old with a bright future scored his first goal. His name's Caden Clark. Go watch him. It wasn't just the goal. It was much more. Dave, give us the primer here on Caden Clark for those people out there that maybe are like, I don't know, have any idea who that is. What this goal meant for the club and what it might mean in the future.
So for Caden Clark, he's from Minnesota, as you said. I think he's one of those athletes you see young players who always knew he was going to go pro. Those idea of how to develop him best and kind of move him around. He was in the Barca Academy in Arizona, which the new New York Red Bull Academy director was a part of. So he, along with a couple other players, came to New York, signed a USL deal. There was question marks just how much he'd play. And then because of COVID, a lot of the players who were expected to be the major part of the USL team were in Florida. And so all of a sudden, these 17-year-olds had to become the central force of a team. He started and played almost every single minute at the 10, which I don't even think is his best position, and finished the year, because it's now over, tied fifth in the USL for assists total. So that's what he's capable of. He's a high coverage player, covers a ton of ground, really clean technically. And I think you saw that from this goal. Ball's bouncing up, halfway up, awkward spacing, and yet he's still able to get his laces through it enough power to get it into the back of the goal. And you saw that all season with him. Is he's always an option, and he's always clean in his first touch and ready to go on to the second touch. I was talking to Doyle a little about him before the show, and I think his best position is a little deeper on the field because he can be more effective, and he's not the final ball wants to dribble a guy number 10. But I think he's a guy who can still create goals and create chances. But what you see for New York is they get high-level technical players who understand the system and work hard. You can kind of play them anywhere. Mm-hmm. That's what you saw with Tyler Adams. He just had to get on the field, and you're going to see that with Caden Clark out wide. And then as they get their feet and they're able to establish who they are at an MLS level, then you can start to put them in their best positions or put them in the spine of the team and allow them to build. I think he's one of 3 to 4 players right now in the Red Bull Academy who's ready to play in MLS. And I think you're going to see it over the next 18 months.
So who are the other 3 or 4?
Omar Sow, who has scored about 150 goals in high school and has killed it. Jake LaCava as well, who is a part of the Red Bull Academy. And I think Jordan Morris is a decent comp for him, just like barrel-chested running back who can finish and creates chances. So those are the ones that I think they're all highest on. And then they've got a couple pieces in central midfield. The question is, are guys going to college? Are they not? How soon will you see a few of the other ones?
Joel, you tweeted after this goal, I believe, something about, hey, give him 18 months and we'll see him at RB Leipzig. Mm-hmm. Take me through the thought process.
The looking glass?
Behind said tweet. Let's get the TikTok. What were you thinking? Why were you thinking it? And what did you see in this game from Caden Clark?
I've heard from reliable sources that the deal he signed has just a clause that come 2022, he's off to RB Leipzig. Not Salzburg. The Red Bull mothership is that high on the kid that they think he's a player for a top 3 or top 4 Bundesliga side. So, and he has looked the part every time he has taken the field this year, whether it was in USL or MLS. And we saw in this game, now the Red Bulls, they won 1-0 over against an Atlanta team that was struggling, or that has been struggling, and looks like they will continue to struggle. But it's not often that you get a kid who walks into the first, the first team of his MLS side and is as comfortable on the field as this kid looked. And he played, kind of a wide attacking position. He drifted inside a lot. As David said, this is probably not his main position. It didn't matter. He was just really, really good on the day. And I think there's a lot of reason to be excited for this team. or excited for this kid if you're a Red Bulls fan, because he does offer a little bit of cleanness and cleverness and attack that the side is kind of missing at times. And you need that to get the type of wins that this one was. You need that to get the type of wins that get you into the playoff, above the playoff line and into the playoffs. And with these 3 points, the Red Bulls are, I'm not going to say sitting pretty, but they are strong favorites to make the playoffs at this point.
I like
Can
to
we
see
just throw in just at the end here, the fact that Minnesota, who is not even operating an academy, I believe right now,
it's in some state of disarray. Yeah.
For territorial rights for a player who never played for them is ridiculous. Can we just put that out there? And I know youth soccer is super complicated and there are 87 layers of everything, but in short, that is ridiculous.
I am on record saying that I think the more competition there is between academies for players, the better. It will benefit the players and it will benefit the academies as well. I don't understand why they got 75K, but hey, hope you use that money wisely, Minnesota United. Josie Altidore out here tweeting. Like, it seems like when young players do good stuff recently, Josie Altidore is just on the brink with his Twitter account.
He's
like,
the new he's the new youngster. He's going to start making sizzle reels to young guys.
Yeah, he is. He's hyped for it. Caitlin, you're laughing. That's the first smile we've gotten out of you. What do you, as someone who saw these situations, young players trying to break through, trying to have these moments, who maybe had these moments yourself, what does a moment like this mean to a Caden Clark?
Well, I think sometimes how you start really can push things forward. And if you just get, he's been successful at the USL level. He's been successful kind of throughout. As Doyle mentioned, likely there's some big opportunities coming his way down in the future. But if you don't start well, or if you don't really get an opportunity, I mean, that's kind of what the international, if you look at the international break across MLS, and if you just look at this season overall for young players, there's been a ton of guys that have been forced into service. And then, some are ready and some aren't ready. And I think about that with when I interviewed Luchi Gonzalez like last year. And I was like, how do you know when a guy's ready or not? I think I was talking about Ricardo Pepi at the time. And he's like, you don't know. there's only one way to find out. You just basically make the decision that it's important to find out, or that it's time to find out. And I think for Caden, he'll take a lot of confidence out of this. I just look back. I was actually listening, of course, but looking back as well at some of his old highlights, and he looked, looking through his play, I mean, he serves a great ball, finds the right pass. He's also really good on the turn. He reminded me a little bit of maybe like Brendan Aaronson, but a little bit stronger, maybe moving with the ball.
Finds the ball more too. Yeah.
Yeah. But anyways, not to add more hype to the thing than already needed. But I think overall, the idea of what you guys are talking about as far as finding players that maybe are in a weird spot or putting them in your system is really, I think, the next step for our academies, because it's one thing to say, okay, yeah, you're going to go into the Red Bull system. But I think that's been an issue with the Red Bulls for a while now, in my opinion, is that generally they've brought through players. Now, of course, there's been a Tyler Adams, and of course, there's been some really special players, but banking on being able to find them consistently in exactly your region, and New York's one of the best ones you can find, even still is difficult to bank on. Whereas when you can actually go out and say, look, Red Bulls created Tyler Adams, they did a great job bringing him along or whatever, but like Tyler Adams is Tyler Adams, and he's a special person to begin with. And it's more about finding those people and those players, wherever they're from, and putting them into your... That's what Red Bull does globally, right? They find players from all over the world and they put them in their system and they say, okay, once we get there, we can go all the way up and get the best out of them. And I think this is looks like a pretty good example of that happening here in MLS.
Yeah, so I agree with Caitlin. I would say this. Philly's been the best at like really recruiting, like going out and getting guys from Michigan and Vermont and Florida and Texas as well. They brought in Axel Picazo, who was a big prospect that they got over FC Dallas. Philly's been number one at that. And Dallas obviously has this territory that spans, I don't know, through Greenland into like parts of South Africa and then up through North Carolina. That makes no sense. So obviously they bring players from across. But I think to Caitlin's point, I totally agree that for New York, it's huge to have some guys who aren't New York guys coming through your academy and through your system to show that you can compete with what Philly's doing, because Philly's going to keep pouring money into it. They're going to keep pushing this. They've got the residency. They've got it all set up. I think for New York, that's that last step to say, you're a great player in Lincoln, Nebraska. Come to New York and compete with the best players every single day in training, and we will get you through to the pro level. And that's something New York hadn't really shown over their time.
And that's also key for the Red Bulls, because from the 2000s to, I'm talking about age cohorts here, the kids born in 2000 through 2003, NYCFC just killed them. NYCFC got, I would say, 80% of the top talent in that region. Now, NYCFC doesn't have the clear path to the first team that the Red Bulls have done, but it doesn't matter if you have a clear path to the first team if you're not able to get talent that can actually take that path and make it to the first team. And, you know, after the Tyler Adams and Omir Fernandez group, there wasn't really anything, maybe until Tolkien, who hasn't made his, you know, debut for the Red Bulls yet. So getting guys like Caden Clark, and then, like you said, So and Lakava, that actually fills a gap that had been created in the Red Bulls Academy system that was so heralded in the first part of the last decade, but really kind of fell apart from late 2015 onwards and is just being rebuilt now.
I think about this, and maybe it's because I'm a KU basketball fan, in terms of college recruiting, and I get it. In terms of the sense of, like, our academy structure should be going out there and finding the players that can grow the most in their system,
yes,
and take the next step from their system. We should be saying, we want to find the right guys to play in the Red Bulls Academy, which is not the same kind of player as we'll play in the FC Dallas Academy, which is not the same type of player which will work in the Union Academy, because the pathways are all different. Let's optimize it and actually find the right guys for the right jobs, and not make it so much about who lives within this little band of territory, and more about how we can create the most growth and the most players who can take the next step, which, whether it be playing first team soccer, Major League Soccer, or like Joe Scally's case, just being sold, bam. Or, you know, you talk about Chris Richards just being sold. Like, move on. You can move on. You're an asset for us, and now we've helped you make this next step. That's what I want to see. By the way, Caden Clark, 17 years, 4 months, 13 days. He's the youngest player to score his first goal for the Red Bulls since Josie Altidore, who was 16 years old, 10 months and 10 days in 2006, which is crazy. I mean, I remember that vividly, both Josie being drafted and then Josie just being this player that you're like, how is this guy 16? He is going to go places. JD in Orlando hit us up. We've been sitting on this for a while. It's the AT&T Rookie of the Year breakdown. He says his bet is Daryl DK. Now, he's in Orlando, so, you know, kind of understand who and why he's betting on Daryl DK. I think Henry Kessler's in there. Mauricio Pineda's in there. Michael Waldissimo's in there. Kate Cowell maybe could be in there, but he's more kind of on the outskirts, certainly right now. But I'm going to say, forget that. Connell Awards this year. We fill the gaps. And the gap is MLS Young Player of the Year, all right? It's not about the Rookie of the Year. It's MLS Young Player of the Year. We're going to base this on 22 under 22 voting, which is ongoing, which basically says you can't be 22 as of decision day, which I want to say is November 8th?
Yes.
Something like that this year. So this new award, the Continental Award for the MLS Young Player of the Year, as a young child cries in the background.
Definitely here. Can.
He's not getting the Young Player of the Year award in this household for this moment right now.
Big Wyatt guy here.
Yeah, I'll ask the question, then I'll mute so you guys can answer. Who is your Young Player of the Year in Major League Soccer this year? They have to be 22 under 22 eligible.
Who wants to start? David, you look like you want to start.
That was a lot that just happened. Diego Rossi doesn't fit under this list because of that distinction, who's the obvious, whatever, great young player. I don't know that there's one to me that's so obvious that it blows everyone else away. Paxton Pomykal's been hurt, which is a big one.
You don't have to say that just for Doyle. I'm just throwing it out there.
Okay. But in terms of production in MLS, I think Louis Binks has been one of the best center backs in Major League Soccer.
He's 18 years old
and he's played at this level. They moved him into center back because the rest of it was a waste.
He can pass the ball, but it's not clear he can defend.
I don't think anyone can defend on that team, and he's still the best at it.
This is a Shakhtar Donetsk-esque take.
Okay.
This is insane.
Don't ask me first if you guys are going to shout me down.
Fine. Okay. I would put Mark McKenzie above, for sure. I would put James Sands above him. We're just talking about, like, center back defensive players right now. For sure, those two. I would put Brendan Aaronson, Cole Bassett. I would put definitely Brian Rodriguez.
Cole Bassett. I love Cole Bassett, but he's played like 400 minutes. Louis Binks played like 1,600 minutes.
Oh my God.
We're not talking about, we're not doing the 22 under 22 award.
You're
saying who has been the most productive this year. Who has had the best
season. And if you're going to argue this, then Mark McKenzie mops Louis Binks. Maybe. Mops him.
Maybe. Yeah. But Mark McKenzie plays on a really good team with other good players.
Oh, okay.
That's like a point in his column.
Yes. He's one of the good players.
Someone else go. Someone else go. Someone else say a name.
I'll take Brendan Aaronson.
All right. For me. Make the case.
I mean, 5 goals, 4 assists. And I think he's taken a step forward in his development. He's on a top 3 team in the East. He's played an important role in that. And I think he has made his team around him better. I think he's gotten in on the other side of it where it's not just being dangerous. He's been able to score important goals. He's been able to get important assists. And he's also showed some versatility to play a couple different positions. It's not necessarily just the attacking stuff. He's been able to press defensively and be a big part of that system that they play in, and even play a little bit more of a defensive role when they've asked him to. So, I think he's the most intriguing young player for me. He's a guy that I've wanted to see, or I'm interested to see when he does eventually go abroad, because I look at a lot of the young Americans abroad, and I think he has the potential to actually raise his game another level around even higher competition. So, Brendan Aaronson, he was my top pick, and I'm going to give him this award as well.
So Tom Boger, Megan's 5-year-old niece is learning right now. She wants to know the word cliche and standard. So I'm just going to bring her in here and point at all of you guys.
Wow.
Brendan Aaronson's the best young player.
Wow.
There's something different.
So defensive. So defensive. I know you love Quebec. I know you love Montreal. But Quebec, come on,
but he's not even. He's British. He's
good. I know, but still, it's a stop in his career.
Say your cliche name, and then we can move on.
I think McKenzie, Aaronson, and James Sands all have really good arguments for it when you consider how well they've played and how good the teams they are, how good the teams they play for are. But I think it's Ayo Akinola. And this is not my number one vote on 22 under 22. It's who's had the best season. And Ayo Akinola, what he has been able to do coming from kind of nowhere, like he was not even second or arguably even third on the center forward depth chart at the start of the year. I mean, he scores 5 goals in 3 games in the tournament this summer. And then he comes out, gets injured, and then comes back in and just keeps scoring. And I would argue that Toronto have actually played better with Ayo as a center forward this year than they have played with Josie up there. So it's there have been some really good performances from young players this year, but what Ayo Akinola has done for the second best team, or the best or second best team in the league, in terms of winning a starting job as a 20-year-old, in terms of being productive, and in terms of elevating what's already one of the best teams in the league, it's rare, and I think that needs to be recognized.
I hear that, but I would say I was actually surprised. I was looking this up the other day. You know, DK is only 6 months older than Ayo Akinola.
Yep.
He's only 6 months older. And I thought of them, I think because he went to college, people think of him as an older player as opposed to how young he really is. So I kind of think if I were to pick between the two, DK might be the one that I would take. And especially when you look at Pozuelo and the way that, you know, TFC have been able to play and the surprise that Orlando has been. I don't know. I think there's a possibility that the rookie of the year could also be the continental best young player of the year as well at the end of this year.
So yeah, I'll just say that Kessler should actually be the rookie of the year, but that's a different discussion.
But regardless, good brand drop from Kalen right there. My vote right now, I think, would go to Mark McKenzie. I won't belabor the point here with cliches and standard answers, Dave. But you did have something interesting to say in the pre-show meeting about this award and how we decide it.
Yeah.
And sort of the parameters around it, which I think is important because we're establishing something new for Major League Soccer that we're into uncharted territory for this league.
We are explorers.
Yes.
We are on the edge. I said that for Rookie of the Year, the one thing that makes the award nice or correct to me is you can only be available once for it. And with young players, if we just make a threshold, for example, Caden Clark will be eligible for the next 5 years. He's a part of this. So I think if you win it, you are no longer eligible for this award. Moving on.
I think that's fair. We make the rules here. The Continental Awards are our awards. They're your awards. Let us know. What do you think? Do you have a name here for the Young Player of the Year? Do you have a better name?
Can I
for
throw
this?
One more
would
out
be,
there?
Would it be and the?
Can I throw one more out there? That might be controversial, but
yeah, sure.
I think if you are going to win MVP or you're an MVP voting for MLS, you cannot be available for this award as well. Cameron agrees. Thank you. Thank you, Cam.
Well,
thank you. That's what I've been Cameron, working on.
Who's the Young Player of the Year for you in Major League Soccer?
Daddy.
Yes.
Wow. Daddy. Get out of here.
Paid him to do that. Shut the door, please, buddy. Shut the door.
Does Cam know how old you really are or how old you
are? I'm young at heart, man. I'm so young at heart. Anyway, if you have a name for this, like it could be the DeMarcus Beasley Young Player of the Year,
whatever,
or whatever, you know, whatever it might be,
let us know.
Yeah, that could be a good one too. 401-206 MLS, extratimeandmlssoccer.com. Before we get to Michael Huda talk FC Cincinnati and what's going on there, we're going to try to just check in on teams we don't talk about much, and we haven't talked about Cincinnati much because they haven't been very good. Let's talk about a team that started 10 college players this weekend. The Rebs. Bright DK, Virginia, you know, Henry Kessler.
Daryl PK.
What, God. I've been so bad at names. And
you understand, just, though, for Daryl DK, well, this is a situation where most people have probably never heard of his brother, and yet we, being MLS nerds, cannot get his name out of
it. It was like 10 years ago, you know?
Like three games, unfortunately.
Yeah, it was like 10 years ago. Anyway, the Revs started 10 college players, Bruce Arena. Doing his thing. And Lee Wynn went 50-50 for the Rebs.
Are they pros now, or are they still college
players? Well, they used to be college players. Oh, got it. Yeah, that's the important delineation there. What do you think about that? Well, you wrote about it.
Yeah.
And it's not the norm, let's say, in Major League Soccer these days.
Yeah. No.
And they won.
Yeah. They won at NYCFC. It was a huge win for the Revs. They have had to scramble this year, because their best player, Carlos Heel, has been hurt basically all year. So they went out and got Lee Wynn, who, remember, played a year at Indiana a million years ago. they have not gotten productivity out of Adam Buksa, the DP striker they brought in from Poland. So it's Teal Bunbury starting up top, and he scored a gorgeous goal off a feed from Lee Wynn. Their defensive signings over the past few years have uniformly underdelivered. Whether it's Michael Mancian or Antonio De La Mea or Alexander Butner, who they brought in to play left back. Well, their entire back line now, right back Brandon Bye, they drafted in 2018. Center back Andrew Farrell, who of course they used to play at right back, he has slid inside over the past year and a half. He's now one of the most mobile ball-playing center backs in the league, and he's key to a lot of the stuff they do in terms of possession. He was drafted in 2012 or 13. Next to him is Henry Kessler. He's playing basically every minute. He was their top pick this year. I think he went sixth in the super draft. And next to him at left back, it looks like DeJuan Jones, who came into MLS as a winger. He was drafted in 2019. And he has been excellent. This team's given up 14 goals in 17 games. Now, part of that is they have Matt Turner, who's posting another all-time year for MLS goalkeepers in terms of shot stopping. But part of it is they're really good defensively. And they've been able to scramble using guys like Scott Caldwell, Kellen Rowe, Matt Polster in deep central midfield. Tejan Buchanan, he was their top pick in the 2019 Super Draft. They've gotten good minutes out of him on the wing. I'm certain that Bruce Arena did not go out and intentionally say, I'm going to build my team through the Super Draft. I'm going to find these talents who other teams have overlooked and I'm going to get the best out of them. I don't think any manager in MLS these days thinks about building a team like that. But he has built his team like that, because they've been more missed than hit with their imports. And the fact that the Revs are where they are, which is comfortably mid-table in the Eastern Conference, which is one of the best defensive teams in the league, just goes to show that there is still talent out there if you are willing to scout for it, find it, and develop it. And the Revs deserve a lot of credit for doing
it. So passionate about that he spiked his camera and his microphone at the very end.
That was Taquito. That was Taquito. I don't
know.
You know why? Because Taquito's like, college soccer is dead. Sign international players only. And that's always been the argument in the Doyle household.
I am not a huge fan of college soccer. I am a huge fan of guys getting being overlooked just because that's the path they came through.
And I would say the other part we've seen now, and this is going to happen but it's something we're going to see more and more of, is RSL just signed Noah Powder, who came out of the Red Bull Academy and now is 20 or 21. And to your point about college soccer, is some guys will develop later and they can't just be dismissed. But we're going to see, as less players go to college and more go into the academy, more of this. Oh, it didn't work there. It can still work. That's my hung up. The girls go to the swings in the back. Yeah.
Come on, guys.
It's a stay at home day, as I've officially been told. That's when we don't go to school. That's when we stay at home. Yeah.
That is what it's called. Stay home days. It's a mess, says producer Anders. A lot going on here, says producer Chris. I think that's a sign for us to move on.
I think the show's been a little static for a little while. We needed to bring new characters
exactly.
in.
Exactly. Oh, wow. There's a lot of kids playing with swings on your neck of the woods. Kalen's sitting here with his gallery wall, and he's just like, my life is refined and sophisticated. I have no distractions. There is nothing to keep me from giving my best effort at all times. Toronto FC, as we speak of Iowa Canola a while back, that was not the best transition, but we just got to get it moving here. 2.18 points per game, got a win against FC Cincinnati that was almost not a win because there was a little push in the back at the end of this one. First, it was a PK, then it wasn't a PK. Robert Sabiga, I think, had a difficult decision, and we'll talk to Michael Hood about whether he made the right one. But they're the first team to clinch a playoff spot, is Toronto FC. Quickly, Kalen, what does that say to you about what they've done this year and about what they are as a club, really? Not just a team this year. It's a sustained thing.
Nothing, really. Oh, it's just, I mean, what, Toronto clinching a playoff spot? When was the last time they missed the playoffs? Like, I guess the fact that they're doing it through the adversity that they've had makes it more impressive. But that's also nothing new either. They've been able to go to MLS Cups with injuries and adversity and, like, roster changes, losing designated players, bringing in different TAM players. They've constantly been able to adjust, withstand, find new players, make good signings, and make it work. So to me, it really doesn't say anything. This is completely what I expected from them.
If they set a points per game record, which they currently are 0.05 points per game better than the previous record holder, I see you shaking your heads.
No, because the schedule is all whacked.
I respect it, but it's...
Yeah.
It's not the same.
No. It's like, they deserve a ton of credit for it if they do that. And whoever, you know, wins MLS Cup and wins the Supporter Shield, like, they deserve a ton of respect, but there's always going to be an asterisk this year.
Yeah, as Anders put it in the rundown, quote, nothing in this year's regular season counts.
So Seattle loses one game, they're not Supporters Shield leaders, and now nothing counts. Awesome. Cool.
All right, so let's turn to the other side of the field, and that is FC Cincinnati. We're talking to Mike LaHood, half man, half amazing, part charming. He paid me to say that. Mike, what's up, man? How you doing?
Hey, what's up, guys? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no doubt. It's an AT&T 5G call to the field, and we're glad to have you. And we start with this. Yop Stam says a bigger team would have gotten that penalty call. And if you didn't see it, Omar Gonzalez with what I'm going to call... Okay, I'm not going to...
Are we going to use the term?
No. I'm not going to say anything, actually. Was it or was not a PK, Mike? What do you think?
I'm usually Cincinnati biased, but that wasn't a PK. I think Omar is a big dude. And he gave him a little bit of the armbar in the back there. But if you're calling that, then there's a penalty kick every game because it's physical in the box. It was a desperation play. The Cincinnati player, I think it was Alan Cruz.
Yep.
But they're just not getting calls going their way left and right. And a lot of teams are getting calls because they're picking the ball out of the back of their net, you know, throughout the season. So it's what happens when the season's going really bad.
I didn't want to poison your viewpoint on that one, but I agree. Let's just call it embellishment from Alan Cruz. He felt
there's
something.
Contact on the legs, though.
Was there?
I thought there was. A little blow. I agree on the top level contact, not enough for PK. I thought maybe there was a little on the legs, but I trust half man, half amazing. What am I
going to do? Yeah, I mean, look, he's part charming. You know, you got this one right. it's been a struggle. It's been a struggle from moment one for Cincinnati and MLS until now, whether it be coaching, signings, you know, all manner of things, scandals, just throw it into the pot and stir it around.
Yeah.
What has happened this year in your mind? Because I remember back in February and March being excited. I remember being on the Jurgen Locadia train. I remember thinking Yuya Kubo was going to be a big difference maker for this team. I remember thinking that this was maybe a playoff team.
Man, a lot's happened. COVID and 2020 have become the great equalizer in sports. And for every team in sports except the LA Lakers, shout out to the king himself for getting the dub. But with this team, the worst thing that happened was that there was a little bit of a break. When you have momentum going with you, you saw it with the Portland Timbers. They struggled, and they won the MLS's back tournament. So it took them time to gain momentum, teams that we're used to seeing being on top. And if you're a team that had a successful tournament like FC Cincinnati, a break was the worst thing that probably could have happened, because although it gives you time to rest, you lose a bit of that sharpness. You're in a different environment. You're in the bubble before, and now you're back in your home market where you haven't been for months. So I think that was one of the many dominoes that fell against them to start this restart of the season.
One of the big moments for them as a club was the need to bring in Jaap Stam during the COVID-19 layoff and all the things that followed with that, from seeing him, from watching the team, from hearing him speak, being around him, all those things. What do you make of him as a coach in MLS and maybe what he's trying to build in Cincinnati?
Look, being a former FC Cincinnati player, I can tell you this. Everything is centered around the start of that stadium. And the fact that to get out of the shadow of Nippert and UC and to have your own project and your own home, that is a requirement for every MLS team. And it will be a massive play for FC Cincinnati. So to do that, you have to bring in a big name. I'd like to dub it the Nightmare of Bearcat Way with Alan Koch in the start to his MLS career. Oh, yeah. And then, you know, we'll call him Voldemort because he who shall not be named, the coach that came after, and the debacle that happened there. So the club was desperate to right the wrongs of what happened in the first year and a half and start fresh with a big name. And if you're Dutch, Jaap Stam is one of the biggest names that you can get as a coach right now.
What is he trying to do? What can he do in this year? Like, as he comes in such a weird time with a roster that's kind of discombobulated in a lot of ways, it feels like, what can Jaap Stam actually do to build the foundation? So when you do open that stadium, which looks awesome, by the way, as I see all the sort of construction photos, that the product on the field is something that they are proud of. Because if you look at the standings right now, if you look at goal differential, if you look at goals scored, it's hard to say that you'd be proud of this.
No. It hasn't been the Cincinnati that we thought we were going to get. We all thought, I think, we were going to get, which was a playoff contending team after the MLS's back tournament. And I almost wonder if at this point in the season, Jaap Stam is saying, let me evaluate. I know the players that I want. So you see the new signings with Kanahelu Makocho, Kuna Matana Makocho, as I like to call him. You see Barriel coming in from Argentina. You know that Jurgen Locadia, although he couldn't score in the Atlantic Ocean right now if he tried, you know that that's the guy that he wants up top. Sim de Jong, the Dutch connection. There's guys that are in this roster for the future. And this year is kind of a loss for them. And I'm almost starting to wonder, at what point does Stam say, you know what, it's not just in the cards for us. We had COVID, and we're going to just evaluate our players in the group that want to take forward with us for next year. And the number one thing that I took away from the MLS's back tournament is you have to stop the bleeding. You have to stop the bleeding in the culture that was created from the first two coaches. You have to stop the bleeding more than anything defensively. And that's why he switched to that back five versus a 4-4 or 4-3-3.
When you mentioned in the names of people that you want there, though, is Jurgen Locadia and the struggles he's had scoring. We know the loan deal got extended another year. Do you think this is a guy who's happy in Cincinnati? Do you think this is a guy who will and can score goals for FC Cincinnati?
I think he's happy in Cincinnati. He gets to play week in and week out, and fair. He's not scoring. I think his frustrations, and we all know how strikers are, and they want service, they want support. A guy that I played with during my career, Juan Pablo Angel, he used to legitimately grab me by the collar and say, get the ball in the box. I need service. I need support. I don't need you to play scared. Give me the ball, and I need to run off me. And I think Jurgen Lacadia is a player who isn't getting the support that he needs. Yes, he's not scoring goals, but it's a one-man show. If you watch their last game against Toronto and even Philadelphia, they're throwing more numbers forward in the 4-3-3 they're playing, but he's a guy that needs runners out of midfield. He likes to drop deep off the ball. He likes to get touches on the ball and then drive into the box. And he's just not getting that. The wingbacks aren't even getting forward. But a guy that I've been really impressed with has been Joe Zhao. He's been the one consistent performer this season who's made a case that he belongs next year and beyond.
What about Frankie Amaya? Because he's one of those guys that on this show, we always go through the play your kids. And of course, he's the number one draft pick, but he has the U.S. youth national team creds. And he has something about him. If you look at like defensive actions among midfielders, he's at the very, very top. Now he plays next to Madunian, so he kind of has to be doing a lot of that stuff. But he feels like a guy, if I was Cincinnati, I would say, okay, that's something that we can start from in the midfield.
I agree with you. I think Frankie, I know for a fact that Frankie is someone that they're very high on. I know Yap is very high on him because of that defensive work rate. Defensive coaches tend to love players that have good defensive instincts. And Frankie, that has been one of the best things, revelations of this season. Not just that goal that he scored in the tournament, but it's been his defensive transition, offensive transition. And you see in the games that Harris wasn't in, Frankie played that deep line playmaker role and even defensive midfield role. He's got the legs, he's young, and he's adding a different element to his game. Frankie will benefit from having just better players around him, more committed players around him, and players who are just as mobile. And I think we have not seen the best Frankie Amaya yet. He's young for one, but I think he has a bright future.
I love Frankie Amaya. I agree with you. I'm very excited to see all those things. One of the pieces we thought would help for them, not Lokadi up top, but also Kubo, to take off some of the creative load to make life easier for those midfielders. What do you see from his game? Where do you think he fits best? And do you think he's a guy that's going to be part of these building blocks for Yap Sam going forward?
Oh, man. I'm a closet Kubo fan who's coming out right now on this show. So, Kubo, I'm out.
Welcome.
I love his ability to play that free roaming second striker, almost attacking midfield role. You saw that in the MLS's back tournament. Him and Ragatin played very well. They combined well with each other to get FC Cincinnati out of pressure. And look, Kubo is not being used, and he hasn't been used in his best position this year because of the need to have more people back because of defensive frailties. And this team was set out to be 4-3-3, and Stam is Dutch. So every Dutch coach practically is going to set you up in the 4-3-3. And after that Columbus game, Jaap Stam took a big swig of something, you know, a hard Dutch drink, and said, this ain't working the way I want it to. And he's had to drop Kubo further back, almost in a box-to-box midfield role, which isn't his strong suit. So I think solidifying that midfield more and more, you'll see a better Kubo. And having Kubo play higher up the field with Lacadia is his best asset to this team.
Mike, you've seen this Cincinnati team in, let's call them different times, more joyous times, certainly. What is your read on the fan base right now, the supporters, and the way that they're dealing with this season in particular?
Ah, man, I have fond memories from being in Cincinnati. When I was in Cincinnati, we were popping bottles of champagne. Now the fan base is popping bottles of Coors Light.
Yeah. Popping bottles of aspirin, man, just trying to get the headache to go away, huh?
Yeah, no, extra strength, actually. Yeah. But no, half the fan base is frustrated. Majority of the fan base is frustrated. This fan base loves this team. They have high expectations for this team because what we were able to do in 2018 was make history and have a winning team. The city of Cincinnati is an amazing sports town. And as you know, in sports towns in the Northeast, you guys are in a sports town in the Big Apple. When things don't go away, people start asking questions that's uncomfortable. Is why are we doing similar things? Why are we giving up goals? But I think that the fan base is also really excited for this club to create a home for itself. And the stadium will be a breath of fresh air. You said it. It's a beautiful stadium. Jeff Burning, if you're listening to me, I prefer a suite, not just season tickets. You can hashtag that. But the fan base, it's almost this anxious waiting period of when are we going to get over the hump? When are we going to say we've arrived? in the MLS. And I don't think this year is going to be it. But I do think the more that Stam can get the right pieces, whether it's if there's activity that can be done in the transfer window before it closes for the league this at the end of this month, then please do it because the team needs it. But an added aspect that I've challenged the GM Nykamp to do is there's such a focus on foreign talent that there are good domestic players. They're just building their academy. So look to them to look to the academy to get young talent. And there are good domestic players throughout the soccer pyramid in the U.S. And I think FC Cincinnati needs to dive into that pool as well.
Let me ask you this. Do a little experiment for me. Think 5-10 years in the future. Let's say 2030. The stadium's built. The training ground's built. FC Cincinnati's been around for a while. What is the whole experience like? What's the soccer culture in this city? And when you think of this club, you mentioned domestic players. What is the dream scenario? Is it a Sporting KC that's built partially through the draft and has that core and then adds an international piece on the top? Is it a Portland that always goes international? What do you think FC, how do they fit into the mosaic that is MLS?
I think FC Cincinnati under Nykamp have laid out their stall and said, we're going to go heavy international, which in the MLS, that's one way of doing it. You saw Atlanta United, they had instant success, but Atlanta United, they also had a core of American players. MLS, you need to be successful. You need a core group of veteran American players who have won things or have gone pretty close. You look at the Atlanta United model. You had Darlington Nagbe, MLS Cup champion. Michael Parkhurst should have been an MLS Cup champion in New England, but World Cup veteran. Jeff Lorenowitz, MLS Cup champion. For me, those guys, those three guys, Brad Guzan. Those four guys were the heart and soul of that club to get them going. And I think what FC Cincinnati is missing is that core group of American talent that are veteran, experienced, and bring a winning culture. That know the league, know how the league functions, and you know can grab the foreign guys by the scruff of the neck and say, hey, follow me. I'll lead us to victory. Because the foreign guys have the talent. Now it's just getting the American foundation to get this thing going.
I think I'm with you here, Mike, that this year is not going to be the year for FC Cincinnati, but there is something there. Like being there, and David's going to make fun of me because, of course, I was in March. The March was awesome. We'll never
forget the March.
I did love the March. There's just something about the culture. I think if they can get a little bit of traction, the city will be right there where it was, as you said, popping bottles. But before we let you go, I do have to ask you about a man named GB Fall, because we're doing our cult hero strikers here in a little bit off of Eric Hurtado's banger this weekend. Tell us who your number one cult hero striker in MLS history would be, or just tell us a good GB Fall story. I'm open for either of them.
So I miss GB Fall. I came in the year after. So since we're talking Cincinnati, I will stick with Cincinnati cult hero. I vote myself personally, but
nice.
We're not talking about that, so I digress. No, the guys on I do some work with Cincy Soccer Talk, the guys on the podcast there, we talk about cult heroes and we talk about this stuff all the time. And a guy that would be my choice for cult hero striker is Danny Koenig. He's the Danish sensation.
Yep.
I've never played with a striker who just works for 90 minutes. And he's like the wind-up toy. And I hope he's in counseling now for anger issues. He would just get going. And just as soon as the whistle blew, he just had that look that said, give me the ball. And he could score a banger if you needed him to. He could score the scrappiest of goals. He just had a knack for being in the right place at the right time, a la Chicharito's previous twin brother, not the one who's playing right now, but the one who was banging in goals left and right when he was in Europe. He just had that similar presence where it would fight for everything, and he scored big goals in big games. And so everyone talked about GB when he was there, and GB did that. But Danny Koenig, I have a lot of respect for him. We call him King Koenig, so here's to you, the king.
Hashtag King Koenig, hashtag cold heroes. Thank you so much, Michael Hood. At Michael Hood on Twitter, tell us what you're doing, man. Tell people where they can find you.
Yeah, as you said, you can find me on Twitter, IG, or Facebook, I think, at Michael Hood. I am doing a lot of things. I recently retired a couple months ago and loving the retirement life. I'm going to be doing on-air stuff, so broadcasting color analyst work. So I've been doing some stuff with ESPN, doing college soccer, Longhorn Network, and making my debut for the ACC this Wednesday.
Nice.
And I've been doing a lot of work with Jimmy Conrad and the Soccer Minute crew. Love to write. So half man, half amazing, half charming, and half everything, whatever you need me to be. So, you know, look forward to what the future holds.
All right, Mike. Thanks, man. We appreciate your time.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me.
All right. Welcome back to the circus that is Extra Time, driven by Continental. Okay. There are not any locks in my apartment. Whoever owns this apartment or whoever had it before, they didn't put any locks on anything, including the bathrooms. So imagine what that life is like.
You know, there is a thing called child locks. You can childproof a door. I don't know. I don't have kids, but I actually think you can do that. I've been to places. They're tricky. I couldn't even figure them out.
I'll look into that. I'll look into that. All right. LAFC.
Can we just do a fact check on Kalen heading into that?
Sure, fact check him. Hit it.
Just because you asked the question, Kalen, when's the last time Toronto missed the playoffs? As if it was a long time ago?
That they weren't in the CONCACAF Champions League final representing Major League Soccer and sacrificing for you, Doyle.
I didn't realize there were that many
Cavs. They gave their playoff lives so you could see the MLS flag for you, risen Doyle. In the region.
All right, thank you.
All right, okay. let's talk about Seattle, who were the best team in the league and then did lose 3-1 to LAFC without Diego Rossi or Brian Rodriguez, who are with Uruguay. Mark Anthony Kay, real quick in this one, hurt. LAFC saying that his x-rays came back negative, which is good news, but you could see that swelling, him walking off the field. That I don't want to diagnose, and I won't, but that would, if it's not a break, it's ligament damage, you would think. And I would think that would probably mean that he's out for the year. TBD, we'll wait to hear more from
people
LAFC.
Didn't actually know, but that the did biggest not look thing good. Weeby can bring to this show is ankle injury knowledge, because that man, it's not even glass. I don't even think it has structurally sound to be glass.
It's just styrofoam.
I've never seen it.
Well, glass would imply that there is structure to it, that there is like a rigidity, whereas there is no. I'm just like, they're just flopping around like, you know, in the breeze for me. But
when we put on his ankle braces, it's similar to watching an NFL player suit up.
We had to like pan out. We had to like reorganize our studio to like pan away from Weeby's ankles.
That's true. The era of the boot I had forgotten about. And also the era of me not able to walk to and from the chair and just like throwing a shoe on over my swollen ankles. Anyway, we've digressed. What do you think of this LAFC win? What do you think of the fact that it looks like they're going to sign Colombian center back Jesus Murillo from Independiente Medellin? He's had Copa Libertadores experience, about 5-6 years as a starter in the Colombian first division. What's going on with LAFC? Like, does this game represent more, Doyle, than just a good night against the Sounders?
Yeah, I think it does. And it was a good night against the Sounders, but I think on balance of play, like, Seattle doesn't have much to worry about here. They played well. They just didn't finish, and they got beat a couple of times by a little sloppiness, but Seattle's going to be fine. For LAFC, it means a lot more than that, because they were tough in this game. They were tough even without, you know, all three of their DPs, both starting wingers, you know, and they were tough after Mark Anthony Kay went down. They were tough without their starting left back, and it felt like a gut check moment. And especially after Ladero scored that golazo in the second half. Because we've seen LAFC in similar situations this year. They give up that one goal, and it turns into three real quick. And this one, they gave up that goal. There was 20 minutes left. They were up 2-1. It felt like Seattle had complete control of the game. And then LAFC got the third. And that was such a huge moment. And to get it from guys coming off the bench, taking their chance, and do it actually playing LAFC soccer. You know, LAFC are not the favorites this year. They're not anything close to what they were last year. But at times this year, they felt like they were an easy out. I think that's in the past now. I think that this team is going to go out there and more often than not going to be willing to go toe-to-toe. And hopefully from Bob Bradley's perspective, make fewer of the types of mistakes that have cost them so frequently, so much throughout the course of the summer.
What is
the thing?
Go ahead.
I was going to say, one of the things that's very been odd to me about LAFC, they're better when they have width from the right back position. And so they've slid Latif Blessing back there to add that. And he, when you watch him in this game after the injuries slide into central midfield, you see the things that have made him so good over the last 2 years. And it seems like you could get something. El Mounir, or if it's Blackman, Jalen Harvey's played center back.
Jalen. I'm actually here for us to come up with ridiculous combo
names.
I'm
pretty sure Jalen Harvey plays for the Bermuda national team. Which just went straight into my brain.
Oh my God.
But he's played center back. And listen, I already know the answer. Bob Bradley is so much smarter when it comes to soccer. I don't disagree with any of that. And obviously, Atuesta being back in this game changes everything for the entire team, because he's, outside of Vela, probably the most important player. But you just see Blessing in midfield. You see the way they play. You see, to Doyle's point, the LAFC soccer, and then the momentum and the energy in the team and the confidence. It just seems like you can get that. Mohamed El Mounir hasn't started a game this year. And yeah, he's a lefty, but can you get something from him that Latif Blessing, who's been one of your best performers, can play his normal position?
Isn't that supposed to be what the Andy Nahar signing?
Yeah, well, no, that's a whole nother.
Right. And Andy Nahar, we came off injured in this game as well. So we hope that he gets back soon. How does a new center back, Kalen, potentially change what you might think about this team? I mean, Walker Zimmerman, of course, they moved him. They got resources. You would think this is sort of the type of signing that they would be using those resources on, a 26-year-old Copa Lib center back out of Colombia. Eddie Segura worked out pretty well.
Yeah. Well, it helps. The main thing is trying to get that midfield three back together. And that's what a center back signing does, is it allows you to move Blackman over to right back. And then it allows Latif to move back into the middle. And part of the reason why LAFC, and the big part of why they've been so good, was that midfield three. The understanding they have, having Latif's energy back in the middle of midfield, all over the pitch. And then you have Atuesta as the calming force and Marc-Anthony Kay. So while I was impressed by the match and the performance, and for an international break, when you have players that need to step up and get goals or find a result, It was a gutsy performance like that, because it could have so easily gone the other way, as Doyle said, when it was one injury and then the next. And it was just, I was just waiting for the Seattle Avalanche to just cave in. And Look, they could have gotten that one with Will Bruin had just before halftime, that I think would have changed the match. And then there was actually an earlier chance too on the set piece.
Roldan
had a header.
Yeah. Well, it was Lerdam also before that had, yeah, a, it had was, a good yeah. But either way, good for LAFC. The thing that I think, you know, sort of dampens all of this is this team just can't get a break. They have had one bad luck injury after the next, after the next, after the next. And they've constantly had to play this weird jigsaw puzzle to fit these pieces back together. And just when you think they're going to get a center back that allows Latif to move back into the middle, then they lose that center midfield anchor in Marc-Anthony Kay, or the connecting piece. So it was a big day for them in a lot of ways, to get them on the right track, and then a really devastating day on the other.
We wish the best for Marc-Anthony Kay, one of the best guys in this league. We love having him on this show, chatting with him. He's so big for Canada.
Hope this is a
short-term thing for him, somebody he can come back from. We were going to talk to Timbers, because we got a lot of Timbers folks telling us that we haven't been talking about them. They've won 5 straight. You know, I wrote the best signings column. We did it on here. We didn't talk about Nizgoda. We didn't talk about Mora. We didn't talk about Yimi Chara. I understand the Chara part, but the Mora and Nizgoda thing is starting to look a little bit short-sighted by us. Any strong feelings on the Timbers? Because this is a team that's dealt with that adversity. They lost their best player. Sebastian Blanco's gone, and they are tied with the Sounders atop the Western Conference.
So I would say, without Sebastian Blanco, this is a team that if they don't beat themselves, they'll beat most MLS teams. And so some of the times with Portland, you see them make mistakes in the back. What you saw against San Jose was, I mean, and obviously San Jose is this whole thing. 2 of the 3 goals were just off giant San Jose mistakes, but Portland played consistent. They didn't let a lot of play behind them. They gave up a few chances on set pieces. Outside of that, they were consistent. They were clean. And then they have talent in all of these guys. You said Obobese came off the bench in this game. That just shows the depth that they have to beat you in the attack. It's not going to be pretty like it was with Blanco, and the ability now of Williamson to control the ball. It looked like it was going to be something different. It's really like a Diego Chara team, but he's good enough, and they are good enough individually to get to. I think this is a team that if they don't make big mistakes in the back, they can win the Western Conference. Are they favorites? No, but they can go toe-to-toe with all of these teams in a playoff.
I mean, they've beaten Seattle a couple of times this year. Mm-hmm. And granted, when they do it, they sit deep. They make Seattle carry play, which is fine. That's exactly what you should do against Seattle in almost every case. But it does come down to the big if with Portland is if they don't make mistakes in the back. And they did make a bunch of mistakes in this one, but it's San Jose. It's not Seattle.
Well, it's San Jose after San Jose won three games. Yeah, so you knew they were going to get smacked. It was a guarantee. Like that, if just annihilated.
Yeah, but no, I mean it's in a playoff series against Seattle. I still think that the Sounders would be favored, given like assuming a full squad for Seattle. But Portland, they have so many weapons, and we know that on his day, Steve Clark can still be a match winner in this league. The back line is a bigger if than I think they would like it to be at this point, though.
TBD for the Timbers. Before we get to the mailbag here, I do want to talk about Eric Hurtado. We have to talk about Eric Hurtado. Eric Van Basten, you know, Marco Van Hurtado, whatever you want to say, man. This goal that he scored is...
it just looked like he's been kidnapped. Maybe he said Marco Van
Come on, Kaylin. Stockholm Syndrome, man. Join me. Get on the bandwagon, all right? You too can tell stories about seeing Eric Hurtado at an airport in San Jose 20 years from now and have it actually matter in your life. By the way, Dave and I did see that, and we often talk about it.
Interesting.
This was an incredible...
We talked about the fact that it was the day of a game and he was leaving while he was supposed to be playing. Right. In San Jose, we never understood that. But guess what? That's Hurtado, baby.
And also, it's all in your head. We are one of the only probably two or three people in the entire world who would see Eric Hurtado in an airport and remember it 6 years later and talk about it. Anyway, this goal was incredible. Taking it on the volley, top corner. I mean, game winner. Well done, Eric Hurtado. My brother has been texting me during games for like a month saying, Kyrie Shelton cannot start at striker. Please give Eric Hurtado a chance when Alan Pulido's out. Hey, he's got three goals and one start, 10 games in the whole year for Peter Vermees. Turned into a pretty good signing for him. But I want to take this a different place. Who is your favorite MLS cult striker and why? And you can define it however you want. You might need to define it.
Okay. So I'm defining it as a player who, when on, looks like their world-class striker, can do everything, scores great goals, and is on like once every 7 years. And so for the 3 months after they score that goal, we get emails of like, why aren't you talking about so-and-so? Like, this is a guy who could contend for the U.S. national team. Then you get the national team talk in where it's like Mike Fucito has to be on the national team because he plays for Seattle and whatever else is going on. So my version is a guy who probably had more success than what this definition is, but Omar Cummings. When he was on for that year and a half, I was like, this dude owns MLS. No one can stay in front of him. He can score from outside. He can run by guys, everything. And then he had injuries and never got back to it. And I was still hopeful. And FC Cincinnati gave him a shot and I was there for it. Never happened. But I will still tell you, when healthy on his day, Omar Cummings is the best striker in MLS
history. Oh,
I respect that. I love that.
Omar Cummings stick.
I played with though. Love that guy. Awesome dude. Yeah.
Who you got? I got a name. I know who my name is.
This is so Colt striker.
In yeah, MLS. Yeah. And you can define it however you want.
It's easy. It's Roger Levesque. Roger Levesque, easily. I mean, the man has a... Who else has built a 200-meter tifo of this man's face, of his mustache? I mean, it's got to be him from, you know, the lower leagues and then coming up to MLS and then even just the, you know, every story, every person you see in Seattle will have a story of, like, meeting Raj out in the street, usually on rollerblades or an astronaut costume or some way or the other. But yeah, he did the business in big matches for them. I think that like the cult classic is the one where it's like, you have to know, it's not your blockbuster hit. It's not your Clint Dempsey. It's not, you know, even a Chad Marshall. It's, you got to go a little bit deeper and know.
Chad Marshall?
No, Chad Marshall, he's closer to cult classic, I would say. But I don't know. He's, I think you have to know the depth, the history. And I think also the big piece for me is like the affection. You have to have the like this like love for this person, like he's one of your own, and like understand kind of the stories behind it. So Raj for me is he's the standard bearer.
As you think of your name, Doyle, I'm going to throw some out there. Luke Rogers came to mind for me.
That's a good one.
Red Bulls legend. Yeah,
Luke the original Rogers. BWP is what they call it.
Yeah, Luke Rogers was a big one. I thought, you know, Cameron Porter is certainly an ETR CCL cult hero legend.
He's on my men's league team. Respect.
Nice. Whoa. Nice. Let's go. That's Let's huge. Go.
Still banging goals. Not right now during hiatus, but he's training, I'm sure.
Just hit that ball over the top, baby. Let him run. Hit the ball over the top late in the game. Dude,
I'm telling you, he's still scoring clutch goals for us every week in Chinatown. I mean, this man, he's still got it.
Are you the Frank Klopas to
every goal?
Just
I
don't want to, you know, we can all see
that's
it.
A very men's league right energy. That's a men's league energy for sure.
Yeah. Can I throw another one out there from the Rapids days? Chinte.
Yeah.
Chinte is a big
40,
one.
But he was more of like a 10 for them because for sure. Like, we create zero chances and then he plays for 13 minutes and we win.
Yeah. He was pre-Elsinho.
Yeah.
But does it have to be somebody who, because I don't think there needs to be a bar on how good you were. Like, to me, Wando fits in this category. Mm. This man took off his shirt and went in the crowd and is flipping around. He's a hometown kid, developmental player. Like, he's a cult classic, cult hero as well. So.
He is, but that's different than being like a weird striker cult.
Right.
Hero. Like, we're talking Antoine Opino right now.
Yeah, right.
We're talking a guy who scored a goal and everyone's like, could he? Maybe. Should he?
Oh, man, that's a good throwback. I like the Antoine Opino shout out right there. This is like, you would name this after Chris Wondolowski, like the early days, first year or two, reserve league Chris Wondolowski, as opposed to the been to the World Cup Chris Wondolowski. He wouldn't win it, but it would be named after him. Do you have a name, Doyle? Because I have a name if you need more time.
There's a bunch. I mean, Domodoro is someone who comes to mind because he scored a bunch of goals, but he was never the first choice. He had the flashy haircut. He was a lot of fun. Matt Kanji came to mind.
Yeah,
right Kanji. After you said Omar Cummings, I was like, actually, I think it's Matt Kanji from that team.
Sire Sen.
I think you have to be like a cult favorite. And
I
don't think Sire
ever earned that. I like them. Charlie wouldn't let you say that. Charlie loves that.
For me, probably Rodrigo Faria, because there's so many stories around this guy who was only in MLS really for 2 years. He was part of the combine, and Octavio Zambrano had him kind of throw the combine. He's like, we want to draft you, but we have the 12th pick in the draft, and you're never going to drop that far if you actually go to the combine and ball out. So he just kind of walked through the combine. He was terrible. MetroStars drafted him, and he won Rookie of the Year. Then he got traded to San Jose, and of course, he scored that goal in that epic series against the Galaxy in the 2003 playoffs, where San Jose, they were down 4-0, and they came back, and they won 5-4. So I think just because of, like, you're always going to remember Rodrigo Faria, even though he was never anything even close to the top of the league in terms of Australia, and probably wasn't actually good enough to be a starter, but he has those moments.
Oh, I love that you went with an Octavio Zambrano name, because I'm coming to finish this off with an Octavio Zambrano recruitment name. Birahim Diop, we've talked about him on this show before, the most unlikely hat trick in the history of Major League Soccer, scored at an independent baseball league stadium, Community America Ballpark. The smile that this man had on his face in the locker room after doing this, this solves hunger. You know, like, it's the sort of vibes that I think would change the world if we could, like, bottle it and pass it out. But this is a guy that Octavio Zambrano went and found in the Gotham League in New York City. Like, he was probably playing for, like, $100 in goal bonuses around the city. They pulled him into Kansas City. I want to say he was a midfielder. And then they just threw him up top for a game. And bam, hat trick. And it was just, I remember being in that locker room covering the story, and the entire locker room was just like jumping around all over him as he was just kind of bashful and like, I don't know how that happened. Like, how did this happen? So Birahim Diop is my guy.
We'd just be remiss if we left one name off. You talk about position changes, guys everywhere, score big goals. Aaron Wheeler has to be mentioned. Full-time center back, central midfield, center forward. Right now, currently deciding between van life and tiny house life, which is classic. So, cult hero.
Actually, maybe we should get him on the show. I want to know which way he goes with that.
Like, yeah, you got it. Tiny house is looking cool right now.
Yeah, but the van life gives you the mobility.
They might have more locks than your apartment.
Yeah, for sure. Van life, more mobility, though. And in these times, you need that. We won't talk about Miami, though. They did win. And they got the other Higuain brother, which I'm extremely jacked about. But Luis Morgan's taking PKs, which I guess makes sense. You guys told me because Higuain skied his against Philly. So good win for them. But let's get to the mailbags. We're running out of time and producing Anders is getting in my ear. We start with Ben Olsen, who was, of course, relieved of his duties as the head coach at DC United, though he will stay with the club. We have some mail about it. Before we get to the mail, though, I just want to get your guys' thoughts as this sort of this decade, this era, maybe two decades, honestly, ends for Ben Olsen. And my thoughts are pretty simple. It's that the league needs more Ben Olsens. Ben Olsen is a legend for both club and for Major League Soccer. What he represented as a player, what he represented as a coach, what he represented as a person, what he represented as a bridge between all those things and the supporters, which is what really makes, in my opinion, a league rich and go round, is unrivaled. And we need as many more of these guys as we can get them. And we need to celebrate them and keep them around for as long as possible. So I know it did not work out for him at the end of DC United. I know it didn't work out a couple different years within that as well. But he was the figurehead for something much larger and something that he did not necessarily have control over, which was the amount of resources that they put into that team. So props to Ben Olsen and everything he did. And I know, look, I know there's the Benny Ball stuff is neither here nor there. And there were times.
No, but he was the face of an organization that hasn't pushed themselves to compete at the highest level. And the face is what everyone's going to connect it with. But it's not like the team is better now that he's gone. So there has to be, as Pablo came on and said, an entire idea of how this club's restructured. And there's been rumors of coaches that have come out. And I think it's hard to say that when you don't know who you are. Unless you want a coach to come in and you want them to decide and say, we're a team that's going to always press high and we just want athletic players. And that's what we're going to do. And we're going to be different than other teams. And then you move that from the top down. But right now, the way they recruit players, the way they've built out their roster, the way they've run the team, I don't think there's a direction. I don't think you normally start with coach. That's to start higher up.
So Stephen Goff reported and Pablo reported as well. Some names in this, Jason Christ, maybe David Wagner and Schalke just parted ways. David Wagner's name's floating around. Jill Ellis, 2-time World Cup winner, Jill Ellis is floating around. Of course, that would be a historic signing. Kaelin Doyle, when you think about this club and you think about those names and maybe others, what makes sense in your minds?
Hadn't thought about it.
Honestly, that's fair, man. I think it's fair. Mean,
that list, that's a small list. There's got to be a bigger list than that.
Yeah.
I don't have the list, but.
I've heard around the league that the Wagner talk is real. And I think David Wagner is a good coach, despite how things ended at Schalke. That team was terrible for the last 15, 20 games that he was manager. Again, I think the problems were, as with Ben Olsen in DC, I think the problems were largely above his pay grade. Jill Ellis would be super interesting because she has won championships. I never really liked the way her team played, but you cannot argue with the success that she had. And obviously that would be a groundbreaking hire. But as Kaelin said, I don't think that's the whole list. I think there's going to be a long search. And I think that part of the search has to be the understanding within the ranks of the DC United decision makers that DC United should mean something more than just one of 26 or 30 MLS teams going out there. DC United has tradition printed on the back collar of their jersey. DC United was the original dynasty in this league. They are still the winningest team in this league. They have had players who have been, you know, icons in CONMEBOL and icons around the world. They have produced great young players, including Ben Olsen, whether it was through the draft or now through their academy. And, you know, certainly Bill Hamid is the face of that in a lot of ways, but there are others coming up. DC United I hate to use the word brand, but the DC United brand, it should mean something more than I think what it largely has. And I think that the team has to embrace that, and they have to be snobby about that in the way that Lakers fans are snobby about it, in the way that Yankees fans are snobby about it, and the way that we see teams around the world in our sport be really kind of like insufferable about it. And I think, honestly, because they have the tradition to be that. And they have the stadium to be that. And it's time to hang some banners and retire some numbers, get Marco Echeverri and Jaime Moreno and, you know, John Harkes and Ben Olsen get them all there and remind the fan base of what this team was and guarantee them that they are making every effort to get back to being that once again.
Vikas Mindureta hit us up, and he does a lot of the times about DC. He says he's just listening to Monday's show. He seems a little silly for this email, but the point stands, nothing will change unless ownership feels public pressure, because for years, maybe sneaking to the playoffs has been good enough, and I'm fed up with not having any ambition to actually try to win anything. Honestly, whenever DC plays, I look for other games on at the same time, hoping there will be something else good to flip to once the game is decided after the first half. That's
sheesh.
Yeah, that's a little harsh. I think, real. We'll end here, and we'll skip the. We have a good email from Chris in the Great White North about the maybe the possible roster changes for U23 spots. I think that deserves a little more time than we can give it. So I'll just do this real quickly for RSL. Brian Dunn says, said on air that whoever the new owner of RSL is, and remember that's still ongoing, needs to be able to spend some money on the team. So with that said, what would be your positions of need to fill? We don't have to go long with this, but you look at that roster, where would be the first place for RSL that you would target?
Striker.
It's got to be, right? Johnson, yeah. Rose, Martinez, Krylock. I mean, when Demir Krylock is by far your best goal scorer and you're pushing him forward the vast majority of the time to make something happen, that's gonna say a lot.
I think there's going to be close to full roster rebuild in Salt Lake after this year. It just, you know, Justin Glad's out of contract. The other center backs have not been good enough. There are questions everywhere in that attack. None of the central midfielders have kind of developed in the way that I think they had hoped. So I expect that RSL will be rebuilding this offseason.
RSL fans want to know what you think. 401-206-0MLS, extratime at MLSsoccer.com. Thanks for sticking with us here through child invasions and cat attacks and all manner of things. Remember, rate and review help us out. Says Chris, and just Chris, I never would remember.
Think of that. Yeah. Maybe make sure to rate and review us.
5 stars for the random traffic noise and children bursting into the room. With that, we're out of here. We'll see you on Thursday, everybody. Enjoy your week.